Dr. Friedgood indicted in Nassau County. Indictments in the New York nursing industry probe. And the jury still deliberating in the Gurney case. It's 82 degrees in sunny mid-Manhattan. The man says increasing cloudiness, cooler and less humid tonight. Tomorrow through Thursday, considerable cloudiness and cool with a chance of occasional showers. This is John Scott with the 8 o'clock edition of the news. Prime Minister Harold Wilson today told the House of Commons that Portugal will provide the first real test of the 35-nation Helsinki Accord signed last Friday. The British leader said he's made this position clear to Soviet leader Brezhnev. Western critics of the conference have argued the Soviets are already violating clauses of the Declaration on Non-Interference in states' internal affairs by bankrolling the minority Portuguese Communist Party. In Famalicão, Portugal, anti-communist mobs stormed a Communist Party headquarters, forcing government troops to flee. The attack came 24 hours after they charged the troops killed two of their members. In Lisbon, a bomb exploded outside a government forestry office, killing one person. Portuguese Premier Gonçalves indicates he's not yet found a way out of his country's three-week-old crisis, but a spokesman in Lisbon expressed confidence that Gonçalves could produce a new Portugal government by the weekend. Jurors seeking unanimous verdicts on all charges today deliberated for a ninth day without success on the fate of former Senator Edward Gurney and three other defendants. Shortly before the panel in Tampa, Florida adjourned, defense attorneys asked federal judge Ben Krentzman for a progress report in a 35-minute closed session with prosecutors. Sources say that Krentzman denied the request. Thus far, the jury of six men and six women has deliberated more than 53 hours in the bribery conspiracy trial that began 24 weeks ago. A sad chapter in history was made a year ago today. WOR's Washington correspondent Clifford Evans has the story.
It was on this date, August 5, 1 year ago, we were told at the White House that President Nixon admitted he had participated in the Watergate cover-up, admitted he had withheld certain tapes from his lawyer, and said he considered impeachment a foregone conclusion. Only the day before, Ronald Ziegler had told us, the president does not intend to be diverted from the job of the presidency. His spirits are good, said Ziegler. But on Thursday of that week, 1 year ago, the president told the nation he was going to resign. And the following day, August 9, President Nixon submitted his one-sentence resignation, and Gerald Ford was sworn in as the 38th president of the United States. Clifford Evans, Washington correspondent, WOR News at the White House.
Japan's Prime Minister Miki has a busy night in Washington to be followed tomorrow by a second-day meeting with President Ford. Tonight, Miki will be dined by the president, and after tomorrow morning's final meeting with Mr. Ford, Miki will address a National Press Club luncheon. He leaves for New York on Thursday morning. Today, the chief executive told Miki that American setbacks in Indochina have not weakened the U.S. resolve to play a major role in maintaining peace and stability in Asia. Japanese Red Army terrorists have released nine of about 50 hostages held under the threat of death in the U.S. Embassy in Malaysia. The accident occurred after Japan freed five radical prisoners and flew them to Kuala Lumpur. Among those still held hostage is U.S. Consul Robert Stebbins. A DC-8 that flew the five freed prisoners from Tokyo is ringed by Malaysian police as telephone negotiations continued among the terrorists, the newly arrived prisoners, and Japanese and Malaysian officials. The big problem of the moment? Other countries are refusing to accept the terrorists. A member of former Teamster boss Jimmy Hoffa's family is apparently missing. He is Hoffa's adopted son, union organizer Charles O'Brien. Family members in Detroit are puzzled, and the son of the missing Hoffa, attorney James P. Hoffa, says the family is trying to locate O'Brien. However, authorities have not yet received a missing persons report. Friends say it's surprising that O'Brien is missing at this time because he was very close to former Teamster Union President Hoffa. O'Brien was last heard from on Thursday, the day after the elder Hoffa disappeared. Today, a Detroit Free Press reporter said several persons talked to O'Brien Saturday, and it was also reported that O'Brien was seen yesterday, but the Hoffas haven't heard from O'Brien since he telephoned them 4 days ago. In Washington, the FBI says it has an ongoing investigation regarding O'Brien. Also in the news, Armco Steel today increased prices averaging 9% for carbon steel sheet and strip products. The Middletown, Ohio firm said prices will go even higher when economic conditions permit. In Buenos Aires, a small, little-known guerrilla group called the Red Brigades says it's released a West German telecommunications executive after receiving a $1 million ransom. The WOR News Time, it's 5 minutes past eight. Indictments today in the New York nursing industry probe, and WOR's John Wingate has the story.
Nursing home tycoon Bernard Berkman and his son Stanley are indicted by a federal grand jury. They're accused of conspiracy to violate federal tax laws and to file over $1 million in false Medicaid claims. U.S. Attorney Paul Curran explains.
The object of the conspiracy with respect to false and fraudulent requests for Medicaid reimbursements for expenses allegedly incurred in operating the Towers and Park Crescent homes from 1971 through 1974 specifically included accrued expenses at Towers totaling over $900,000, over $29,000 in interest claimed as an expense by Towers for loans actually made to Bernard Bergman himself, $24,500 claimed as a building maintenance expense at Park Crescent, when in fact the money had been used to pay for personal home improvements made on behalf of a Park Crescent employee.
Meantime, a state grand jury slammed Bergman and his son, plus his accountant, Sam Dashiewicz, with charges they stole $1.2 million in state Medicaid funds. All three are accused of setting up a sham company they knew would not keep the Towers nursing home either clean or healthy, then of submitting claims for services never provided. John Wingate for WOR News.
White House News Secretary Ron Nessen says President Ford has made no secret of his feeling that New York City's financial affairs have been mismanaged. Nessen's comments stem from the president's statement to Belgrade, Yugoslavia officials yesterday that New York City officials don't know how to handle money. All they know how to do is spend it. New York Mayor Beam said later, "I never thought I'd see the day when the president of the United States would go around the world talking disparagingly about any part of this country." New York City Council President Paul O'Dwyer has described the president's comments as crass stupidity. Now, I'll have the weather and the top of the news in brief after this.
In New York, to know men's clothing, you've got to know your B's.
A lot of good men's stores begin with the letter B, Jack.
Right, Roger, but we believe bonds to be the be-all, if not the end-all, to those who would be wise and be thrifty.
Do you out there know that Bonds is perhaps America's biggest chain of stores primarily selling men's fashions?
Did you know that Bonds stores have their own manufacturing operation in America's number one city for fine tailored clothing in Rochester, New York?
Did you know Bonds buys over 1 million yards of fine fabrics each year from such great mills as Burlington, Daring Millican?
Did you know that Bonds employs over 4,000 specialists in the marketing, making, tailoring, and fitting of men's clothing?
Did you know that Bonds sells more leisure living clothes and furnishings than almost any other men's store you can name?
I didn't even know that.
Did you know the new Bonds prices on even the finest fall vested suits will not exceed $150 and many will be as low as $125?
Did you know the new Bonds has stores in 80 American towns and cities, with 21 in this area alone?
Price or location, the new Bonds is where you live, believe. Believe me.
Believe Roger. He knows his bees.
Increasingly cloudy, cooler, and less humid tonight. That's what the weatherman says. The low in the upper 60s. Tomorrow through Thursday, considerable cloudiness and cool with a chance of occasional showers. The high both days in the low 80s. The low tomorrow night in the mid 60s. Chance of rain, 20% tonight, 30% tomorrow, and tomorrow night. Winds northwest, 10 to 15 miles an hour tonight, north at the same speeds tomorrow, and northeast 10 to 20 miles an hour tomorrow night. Right now, in partly cloudy mid-Manhattan, it's 82 degrees, the humidity 53%, the THI 76, the wind north-northeast at 3 miles an hour, and the barometer is rising from 29.83 inches. And the top stories, jury still deliberating in the Gurney case. Dr. Friedgood indicted in Nassau County wife murder case. Dr. Bergman indicted in nursing industry probe. Prime Minister Wilson tells the House of Commons that Portugal provides the first real test of the 35-nation Helsinki Accord. He's made this position clear to Soviet leader Brezhnev. And that, friends, is the 8 o'clock edition of the news. This is John Scott. Next news as it happens, next scheduled news tonight at 9 over WOR Radio 710, the talk of New York. And now, Barry Farber over WOR New York.
I'm E.G. Marshall. A good name in man or woman, the great poet tells us, is the immediate jewel of their souls. True enough. And how valiantly, even desperately, all of us would fight to preserve and protect a good name. But would you also do battle to preserve or protect a bad name? Look at it this way. Suppose a bad name was the only name you had. Suppose it were a name that would make you rich and famous. What then? Would you give it up? Our mystery drama, Hung Jury, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Howard Da Silva. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
For a lot of people, a full-size car is a downright necessity. Buick understands that, which is why they build Le Sabre, a car with lots of standard comfort and convenience, a big trunk, and honest-to-goodness elbow room for six. Buick Le Sabre, free spirit in the family size.
ShopRite for your holiday dinner. ShopRite Grade A Tom Turkey, 16 to 24 pounds, 55 cents a pound. Or hen turkeys, 10 to 14 pounds, 59 cents a pound. Save on fresh ground chuck, 87 cents a pound. Or beef shoulder, London broil, $1.47 a pound. Pick up a Patrick Cudahy 3-pound canned ham, $4.99, and be prepared for unexpected guests. For your fruit bowl, there's golden ripe bananas, 15 cents a pound. Navel oranges, 10 for 99 cents. There's a lot more for a little less at ShopRite.
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, Mom, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
If yours has been a generous measure of gracious living, your senior years should be lived in a grand manner, too. And they are at the Cupola, the ultimate in senior citizens facilities, conveniently located in Paramus, New Jersey. At the Cupola, living quarters are private, of course. Each is kitchenette equipped and available unfurnished or furnished. Yes, the grand manner of living is alive at the Cupola, with gift, barber and beauty shops, card and game rooms, libraries, a theater, maid service 7 days a week, planned activities, three superb meals a day from a diversified menu, a fully staffed infirmary right on the premises, and every convenience, including the famous Paramus Ridgewood shopping hubs. The Maloney family, owners and managers, invite you to discover this truly distinctive senior citizens facility for yourself. Visit the Cupola at West 100 Ridgewood Avenue in Paramus, or call 201-444-8200. Or if you prefer, write WOR for their free color brochure. The Cupola. Make the next years the very best years of your life.
They exist in every country. Here, they are referred to as Middle America. They are the hard-working, sober-minded, respectable members of the community, the guardians of its morality. And one of their vast number is the hero, or more properly, the protagonist of our play. His name is Henry Pollard. He's 40-ish, bald, a bit plumpish, and like the character in the classic popular song, you'd pass him on the street and never notice him. And the only reason you'll notice him now is because we shall take you into his house, a suburban split ranch, where we shall confront him in an after-dinner discussion with his wife.
Henry?
Yeah?
I'm afraid I did something you might not approve of this afternoon.
Oh, there's not much danger of that. What was it?
I volunteered you again.
Did you? What for this time?
Oh, the books at the church are so confused.
And you said I would straighten them out.
They need someone who's an accountant.
I don't mind, Norma.
You don't?
Of course not.
Well, I do. Now that I think of it, I just...
Oh, dear. You're upset.
Yes. Yes, I'm upset. Let me tell you why. Louise Farnham, head of the finance committee, called me and said, "Darling, our books are absolute chaos. Could Henry be a doll and straighten them out?"
Well?
I said yes, without thinking. And then I said to myself, why?
Why shouldn't I, Norma? I'm an accountant.
You're not the only accountant in the congregation. Why don't they ever ask Seth Burton or Tom Mosley?
Well...
Whenever something has to be done, the automatic reflex action. Call on Henry Pollard.
I don't mind.
You've been extending yourself for 10 years. In the church, the school, the charities. And where did it get you?
Where is it supposed to get me?
Oh, nowhere definite, I suppose, but... I don't think you're getting any real satisfaction out of it.
Now, that's not true, Norm. What's all this? Why are you so upset?
Because you're being taken for granted, and I think that rankles you. I think you're bored with your life.
Norma, darling.
No, you're 40. You're not really getting anywhere.
I've got a promotion coming up.
You haven't made a mark on the world, and you think being active in the community will somehow do something. But it hasn't.
Darling, I'm very content.
You don't use that word at 40. It's men like you who eventually break out, do something rash, desperate.
What can I do to convince you that I'm happy with the way things are?
Oh, I guess I'm being silly. I'm not even sure I understand what I'm saying. Oh, I hope that's not the office.
Darling, if they need me, they need me. Hello.
Hi, precious.
Who is this?
Oh, you're not alone.
Yes, Mr. McTavish. I remember you.
Can you get away?
Well, aren't you supposed to be in Los Angeles?
Oh, I missed you, sweetie, so I came home.
Well, if you need the figures, I...
Oh, the way you say figures really makes me feel sexy.
I'm sorry you missed me at the office.
Oh, Angel, I miss you everywhere. I can't get enough of you.
No, you people cannot do the annual report unless I check it out. Where are you staying?
Oh, baby, the champagne is cooling nicely.
I see. Well, look, this kind of thing really cannot be permitted.
Pour it on.
Suppose I weren't home this evening.
Honey, I'd be so lonely, I think I'd die.
Well, we'll have to make it short.
But sweet.
To save time, make sure everything's laid out and ready for me.
Oh.
Do you have to go out this evening?
Oh, these are the West Coast people. They were supposed to be here at lunch. They claim their plane was late or something.
No.
They have their presentation tomorrow afternoon. Oh, well, what's the use in complaining?
Darling, suppose you'd refused.
That's not in my nature.
I'm worried about you.
Why? There's absolutely nothing to worry about. Norma, did I wake you?
No, dear. I've been waiting up.
Well, that's why I called. This thing is going to take longer than I thought.
Oh.
I can't tell you how confused everything is.
Will you be very late?
I'm afraid so. Don't wait up for me.
Of course I'm all right. You're letting these people take advantage of you.
Well, I don't mind.
Oh, Henry, sometimes I wish you would mind.
You'd better get to bed, dear. Good night.
Good night.
Lover.
Hey, how you doing?
I need $100.
I gave you $100 a half hour ago.
Well, the bad man took it away from me. He kept making that little ball drop into black every time I said red. So I thought I'd fool him. I said black, and he made it drop red.
Well, our luck'll change.
Can I have $100?
Well,
Something wrong? You have such a funny look. I mean, a serious funny look.
I don't have $100.
Oh, well, that's nothing. When we were in Vegas, you didn't have $1,000 that time either. But you just went ahead and asked Mr. Nightingale if everything was okay.
Mr. Nightingale?
Yes. You said they call him Mr. Nightingale because he sings such a sweet song.
Well, it's just that I'm in kind of deep.
Oh, precious. You mean you won't give me $100?
Sure I will, sure. You just wait here.
Well, Mr. Pollard, have a seat.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
I would like to extend my line of credit.
Credit, credit, credit. The whole world's based on credit. Ah, well, let's check it out.
Well, what are we checking out?
Oh, we're completely up to date, Mr. Pollard. The dial on this telephone is hooked into a computer. In this little book, we have a roster of our customers' names, and besides each is his code number. And let's see, Pollard, yeah. Oh, yes, 091. And so we dial 091. And in practically no time at all, the computer prints out on this typewriter everything we need to know. No sooner said than done. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. I'm afraid we cannot extend you any more credit.
But you said... You said my credit was unlimited.
Yes, yes, we said that, and it's true. Your credit may be unlimited, but you... You're the one that's limited.
I don't understand.
Well, now, sir, you are an accountant, true?
Yes.
And so you, of all people, should certainly have an orderly sense of finance. You owe us a total of $20,000.
$20,000?
It adds up, doesn't it? 50 here, 100 there, 1,000 another time.
But I...
Yes, you don't remember, of course. This is the safe limit of your credit. And, of course, we must now discuss a means of payment.
$20,000? I don't have anywhere near that kind of money.
Mr. Pollard, I am not a moralist. I won't say to you, if you can't lose, don't play, or if you can't pay, don't borrow. That's all spilled milk, water under the bridge, a lock for the door of the empty barn.
But where can I possibly get $20,000?
You have $20,000. We've checked you out. That's how we set your limit.
But where?
You have a fine Persian rug on your floor in excellent condition. Bring at least $1,900.
Yes, but...
I'm showing you where this $20,000 exists. Now, you have an antique silver service set, which I have appraised at close to $1,100.
What are you saying? How do you
know... chose a propitious time to enter your home and consider the contents. And these, plus other valuable items, total $10,000.
But I can't sell...
For the other 10, you can take a second mortgage on your house. You see, the money does exist.
But all the furniture and valuables you're talking about belong to my wife.
Of course.
And the mortgage, the house, we own it jointly. I couldn't raise money without her consent.
And here you were saying you had no money.
But I can't ask my wife to...
Why not?
Well, because what could I tell her?
The truth.
How? How can I tell her the truth?
Sir, what kind of marriage do you have?
She'll divorce me.
In which case, you'll divide your property down the line, and your half will be enough to satisfy your debt.
How can I tell her I've been gambling and that I had another woman?
Now, you don't have to tell her about the other woman, just the gambling.
I can't tell her.
You will. You will. Just a matter of choosing the right time.
There's never a right time for...
Oh, yes, 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 there is, there is. And you pick it. Would you rather go home and tell her now? Or would you rather tell her after we break your legs?
Well,
His name may be Mr. Nightingale, but the song he sings is more fitting for a vulture. Well, our friend Henry Pollard does not seem to have a pleasant set of alternatives. But there's no way to avoid the choice. And so, he will decide as soon as I return in just a few moments with Act Two.
Let's hear it from Martin Payne! We've got decorative lumber, lighting fixtures galore. We've got tiles and bulbs and brushes. We've got covering for the floor. Rollers, paints, and spackles, wall covering till you'll faint. Martin's Home Decorating Centers, it ain't just paint.
You can still decorate in time for the holidays and save. Today through Saturday, it's Martin's Half Price Paint Sale. Pay only half price for a special selection of Martin's wall paints, ceiling paints, porch and deck paints, kitchen and bathroom enamels, all at half price. Buy Goodyear self-stick floor tiles, 45 cents each. In stock, pre-pasted wallpapers, 50% off regular prices. Cushion soft bathroom seats, now only $9.99 each.
We've got decorative lumber, lighting fixtures galore. We've got tiles and bulbs and brushes. We've got covering for the floor. Rollers, paints, and spackles, wall covering till you'll faint. Martin's Home Decorating Centers, it ain't just paint.
What do you give someone special for Christmas? New Year's Eve. A fantastic overnight 24-hour New Year's Eve party for two at the elegant St. Moritz Hotel on fashionable Central Park South in New York. Just about the perfect Christmas gift at a rate price of 65 cents per couple. Listen to what you'll give. A deluxe double room starting the afternoon of the 31st. Dinner in the delightful Café de la Paix with a full bottle of iced champagne. Piano entertainment. Hats, horns, a sparkling celebration in bubbly St. Moritz style. And New Year's morning, continental breakfast at Rumpelmeyer's, one of New York's most delectable traditions. Or breakfast in bed. And 3 p.m. checkout New Year's Day. Just $65, all taxes and tips included. Make arrangements today by telephone to give and get the Christmas gift of the year. New Year's Eve overnight party at the St. Moritz. Call PL5-5800. That's PL5-5800. Ask for Miss Park.
The current issue of TV Guide magazine profiles pro football's unusual rookie. Many first-year performers pick up splinters when they begin. But Phyllis George stepped right into the starting lineup on the Sunday NFL broadcasts. A special sports report on a former Miss America in the world of football. In the same issue, TV Guide goes in search of public television's audience. Who are they? Where do they come from? And why do they watch? The answers may come as a surprise in part two of PBS Under Fire. Also in this week's TV Guide, writer Ralph Schoenstein recalls the time 20 years ago when, fresh out of the service and new to television, he produced his first show, Operation Merry Christmas. The disastrous results make humorous reading in TV Guide, America's biggest selling magazine. On sale everywhere.
When a man walks what is called a straight and narrow pathway all his life, the law of averages insists that he will have to fall off eventually. And the distance he falls is usually related to how firm was his step in the first place. Henry Pollard must have been treading very lightly because he has fallen all the way.
I can't do it. I can't tell Norma.
Then there may be another alternative. Steal it. Steal it from your company.
Steal it? I'm not a thief.
Oh, yes, you are. You're willing to steal the money from me. And don't say that's different.
I can't steal the money.
Why not? You're an accountant.
Oh, I don't handle money. I just keep track of figures.
Well, then you just have to go home and test your marriage.
Have you got my 100, sweetie?
Huh?
My 100 smackers. So call because I'll give you a kiss for each and every one of them.
No. Let's go home.
I don't want to go home. I want to play roulette.
I don't have any more money.
I know. That's why you went in to see Mr. Nightingale.
He won't give me any more.
Uh-oh. You're broke.
And in debt.
Oh.
Let's get out of here.
Where can we go?
Who cares?
I care.
What was all this you were telling me about being a free spirit, huh?
Well, your spirit can be free, but everything else costs money.
Well, let's just get in the car and drive, huh?
And live on what?
On my credit cards. It'll take them maybe a year to catch up with me, and then who cares?
It's been nice knowing you, Henry.
Julie.
Henry, a girl has to be sure of the rent.
But I can't go home. I can't. My name is Henry Randall Pollard, and I intend to take my life with this pistol. I commit this act because I don't have the ability to achieve success, nor do I have the humility to live with failure. Nor do I have the courage to pull the trigger. No, I'm not afraid to die. I just am not willing to shoot. Because if I make it a suicide, then Norma and the kids will not collect the insurance. What I better do is have an accident. An automobile accident. There's a guy up ahead, huh? All alone, this hour of the night. He must have had a breakdown. No, I can't pass him by. I can do what I have to do later. Let me do a good deed before I leave this world. You in trouble?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks for stopping. I can't... I don't know. Something went wrong with the car.
Well, I can give you a lift to the nearest phone or garage.
Would you? Oh, that would be fine. My name is Barrington. Elmer A. Barrington.
I'm Henry Pollard.
Well, this is so kind of you, Mr. Pollard. So very kind. Could you drop me off at a motel? I'd like to spend the night there and worry about the car tomorrow.
Sure.
Sufficient unto the day. The trouble's there, too, as they say.
Hop in.
Just got a few things I want to take with me. This bag and my attaché case. Yeah, that's about all. Now I'll just run up the windows and lock the doors.
Let me give you a hand.
No. Don't you touch that case.
What? I only wanted to help.
Put it down.
Well, sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I see it all now. This is the way it was supposed to be. Kubik arranged for my car to stall out on the turnpike. Then you happen along as if by coincidence and kill me and take the money. That's an old trick.
Will you please tell me what you're talking about?
Oh, yes. It's the last trick you'll ever try.
Hey, what are you going to do with that gun? You can't kill me.
Oh, but I can. And I kill very well.
Look, mister.
Because I have an instinct. A hunter's instinct. A killer's instinct. I smell, I sense death. And murder.
Look, all I wanted to do was help you.
And before I kill you, I must tell you why your little scheme failed.
I had no scheme.
You were overmatched. You and my idiot servant, Kubik.
I don't know anybody named...
This is the last minute of your life. And you should know why your amateurish plan was doomed from the start.
Believe me.
I've lived here in America 30 years. Look at me. Listen. How I speak. I'm an American, a typical American, no? But my name isn't Barrington. It's von Barenheim. I killed 100,000, 200,000, who can count them? I pacified Warsaw for my Führer. The others, Goering, Himmler, Goebbels, Streicher, all dead, all gone, except me. one they call the Werewolf of Warsaw. And now, you're dead too.
It was a miracle. He pulled the trigger, but the gun misfired. I jumped him. He may have been a killer in his day, but that day was over. He was now an elderly man. He kept pulling the trigger, but I was able to push the gun against him. And when it finally went off, the bullet killed him, not me. Ironic. Why had I struggled? Why didn't I let him kill me? I had wanted to die. Or did I? And he had said something about money. I opened his attaché case. It was filled with bills. 20s, 50s, 100s, in neat bundles. I felt absolutely no remorse. It wasn't as if I had killed a decent person. He was, after all, a Nazi war criminal. And why should I involve the police and try to explain? And why not just take the money, bury the attaché case a few miles down the road, and go home? Go home. Pay off Mr. Nightingale and never stray off the straight and narrow path again, because, well, maybe this was the way Providence chose to reward me for being a good citizen who had only made one little mistake.
Will you be home for dinner again this evening, Henry?
Of course. I come home every night, don't I?
Well, yes, dear. This past month.
I had to slow down. I've been working too hard. No more night sessions at the office.
I'm glad you don't drive around so much at night anymore. Say, you know that night you came home late?
Hmm?
I think it was the last time you stayed at the office. A man was murdered on the turnpike.
Yes. Yes, I think I remember.
Well, they caught the murderer.
They what? Who is he?
Henry, you look so pale. Well, I don't blame you. You passed that spot just before or just after it happened. It might have been you.
Who's the murderer?
Well, he's not the murderer yet, not until he's convicted. But the suspect is a man named James Kubik.
James Kubik?
Yes, he's been arrested and charged. And they don't do that unless they're pretty sure, do they?
James Kubik. Now what do I do? Do I say that Mr. Kubik is innocent? Do I come forward and present myself as the killer of Mr. Elmer A. Barrington? I should. And if I were everything I claim to be, that people think I am, I would. But I'm not what I claim to be. If I were, I'd never have gotten into this thing in the first place. But how can I let an innocent man... Well, maybe a jury will acquit him. No point in my being hasty. Just wait and see what happens. Was there any mail today, dear?
Yes. I was going to call you at the office, but... Well, you received a summons for jury duty.
I'm on the panel.
Do you know who can get you out of it?
Oh, why should I want to get out of it?
Louise Farnham's husband, Howard. It's about time... Did you just ask why would you want to get out of it? You can get stuck with a murder case and be tied up for weeks. Even months.
Well, but it's the duty of every citizen.
Certainly. Therefore, let somebody else do it.
No, dear. I'm afraid I'll have to accept my obligation.
Mr. Pollard, you are aware of the fact that you're under oath.
Yes.
My name is Victoria Ullman. I am the attorney for the people. Do you know me?
I do not.
Do you know the defendant, James Kubik?
No.
His attorney, Mr. Kenneth Hayes?
No.
His Honor, Judge Wilson?
No.
Did you know the deceased, Mr. Elmer Barrington?
No.
Do you know any of the jurors so far selected?
No.
Then you are not acquainted with any of the parties so far involved in this trial.
That's right.
And have you formed any opinions on the matter?
No.
You understand you will be sequestered for the duration of the trial, unable to go to your office by day or to your home at night?
Yes.
Your Honor, the people find Mr. Henry Pollard acceptable.
I knew the questions were a matter of form. All the time she was talking to me, she was looking at me, trying to determine, maybe to guess, if I could be fair, or if I could even be prejudiced in her behalf. I breathed a sigh of relief. I was halfway home. I wanted to be on this jury. I wanted to be on this jury more than anything else in the world. But Mr. Hayes, the defense lawyer, he scared me.
Mr. Pollard, the defendant's name, Kubik, does it suggest an ethnic origin to you?
Well, perhaps.
What kind of origin?
Oh, European.
What kind of European?
What kind? I'm not sure.
Would you suppose it to be Slavic?
Yes, I would suppose so.
Do you have any feelings one way or another about people with foreign-sounding names?
No. He looked at me very closely, very carefully. He was coming to a decision. I couldn't say a word. What I wanted to tell him was, pick me. Pick me. I'll see to it that your client goes free. I know he's innocent. Choose me. But of course, I couldn't say that. I couldn't say anything. I could only wait and hope. Hope that somehow he would read something in my voice that would make him say, yes. It seemed he regarded me for an hour. But it had to be much less than a minute. Finally, he said,
Your Honor, Henry Pollard is acceptable to the defense.
Acceptable to both the people and the defense. We have Henry Pollard, now a juror, sitting in judgment. We know what no one in that courtroom even remotely would dare to suspect, that juror number 6, Henry Pollard, is the killer, and not the defendant, the accused, James Kubik. How can justice possibly be served here? Well, you know that justice always triumphs. When I return with Act 3.
You've worked hard to get where you are, and now would be a very good time to give yourself a little pat on the back in the form of Buick Electra, a car filled with room, luxury, comfort, the perfect place for you and your free spirit to get together. Buick Electra. Think of it as recognition for a job well done.
From the folks at Woman's Day. To help you celebrate, we're featuring a special bonus in our January issue. Key excerpts from the book, A Year of Beauty and Health by Vidal Sassoon. You won't want to miss his expert advice on makeup, diet, exercise, hair, and skin care. And there's no better time than the new year to take stock of your finances. For helpful information, read Money Facts to Stretch Your Dollars in the January issue of Woman's Day magazine. And while watching your money is certainly important, you ought to be watching out for your health, too. Look for tips on keeping healthy and happy during these cold winter days. And here's something that'll come in handy, the charming 1976 Woman's Day calendar. Instructions for assembling and framing it are in the January issue. And to keep your house looking cheerful and bright all year long, why not grow some beautiful flowering houseplants? For tips on how to grow them successfully indoors, see the January Woman's Day. Look for the blue cover with the lovely pink houseplant.
have been observing the workings of fate on the life of one Henry Pollard. Henry Pollard is a typical citizen, outwardly. But inwardly, we are aware of other things. Henry has led two lives. One, a safe, sober, uneventful suburban existence. The other has seen him violate at least 5 of the 10 commandments. Now, both lives come together in a courtroom where Henry, who has committed murder, is not in the prisoner's chair where he belongs, but in the jury box.
And we will prove that the defendant, James Kubik, did, with all malice aforethought, plan and execute a scheme to murder his employer, Elmer A. Barrington.
As she started to talk, I looked at the defendant very carefully for the first time. He was about my age, small. He had shifty eyes, which I suppose was not in his favor. He had a nervous manner, which didn't help either. But he had a right to be nervous. He was on trial for his life. I wanted to tell him, "Don't worry. I won't let you pay the bill for me. You're safe. I'll swing this jury for you."
Mrs. Bronson, you were Mr. Barrington's housekeeper?
That's absolutely correct.
You worked for him for how long?
15 years.
And what kind of a man was he to work for?
A saint.
What business was Mr. Barrington engaged in, Mrs. Bronson?
He bought and sold.
What?
Anything. Everything. Stocks, bonds, houses, business. He was a very sharp, shrewd man.
And was he accustomed to carrying cash with him in large amounts?
Oh, yes. Thousands of dollars in that attaché case of his. And when I'd say to him, "Mr. Barrington, ain't that dangerous?" he'd say, "Well, I got Kubik to protect me." Some protection that one turned out.
The pistol he was carrying the night he was shot, the one that killed him, lying there on the table, do you recognize it?
Yes, ma'am. Belongs to Mr. Kubik.
Will you tell us what happened the night of the murder?
Well, Mr. Barrington had just got a phone call. And he said, "I have to go upstairs and get my attaché case. Get hold of Kubik and tell him he has to drive me."
Where's Kubik?
I'm right here, Mr. Barrington.
What's the matter with you? You look like hell. Been drinking again?
Oh, no, sir. I just feel sick.
Well, I can't let you drive me if you're sick. Is the convertible okay to take?
Yes, sir. I fixed the carburetor.
Come out with me and make sure.
Mr. Barrington, I'll need some money to pay some food bills tomorrow.
Well, wait a minute. I got some here in my case. Will $100 bill cover it?
Yes, sir. He opened that briefcase and it was chock full of money. Well, I'd seen it before, so it didn't faze me none. But Kubik's eyes, they shone like floodlights.
And then Mr. Barrington and the defendant left the room. When did you see Mr. Kubik again?
Say half an hour later. I was in the kitchen. I thought you'd gone to bed.
Yeah, I can't sleep.
Where are you going?
You mean I got to check in and out to you?
I thought you were sick.
I got to go out and get some air.
You mean some booze?
Yeah, I got to get rid of a headache.
Maybe if you went on the wagon.
This is a good little thing you got here. You keep telling the boss I'm a loss and then...
How come you get all them hangovers?
I got headaches.
From booze?
No. From the boss. He can drive you crazy. One day, I am going to kill him.
I believe you would, too.
Ah, shut up.
Where are you going?
I said I was going out.
Now, Mr. Kubik, you walked out to the garage with Mr. Barrington.
Yes, I did.
And you checked out the carburetor of the convertible?
Yeah, I did that.
And then you claim you gave him the pistol.
Yes.
Ordinarily, you would carry the pistol because you were also his bodyguard.
Well, yes, but I wasn't driving him that night.
No one saw you give this pistol to Mr. Barrington?
Well, nobody else was there.
So we only have your word for it.
Why would I lie?
Why, indeed? Were you aware of the fact that Mr. Barrington carried large sums of money on his person?
I didn't know what he carried. It was all in that case.
Mrs. Bronson has just testified that Mr. Barrington opened the attaché case in your presence and that it was filled with bills.
I did not see it. I mean, I mind my own business. Somebody opens a private briefcase, I don't snoop to see what's inside.
What have you to say to the testimony given by Mrs. Bronson that you threatened to kill Mr. Barrington?
I didn't threaten to kill Mr. Barrington.
Did you say, one day I'm gonna kill him? Well, did you?
No.
You didn't say it.
But I did not mean it. Why would I kill him?
Because he was strict. Because he may have insisted on a better job from you.
Everybody says something they don't mean sometimes. Don't you? Don't you ever get mad at somebody?
It was going from bad to worse. When you sit on a jury, you know how things are being taken by your panel mates. You can tell, well, by the way they breathe, the way they listen, the way they pay attention or pretend to pay attention. You can tell everyone's already leaning one way or the other, and they were leaning toward conviction. Unfortunately, he was a terrible witness for himself.
Didn't Mr. Barrington threaten to fire you?
No. Yes.
And isn't it true that the real reason he kept you is because you were willing to work for low wages?
Why
were you willing to be underpaid, Mr. Kubik?
Jobs are hard to get.
Especially for a man with a criminal record.
To compound the damage, Kubik had served time for assault. He had almost killed a man. There may have been some justification, but I could see he was gone. And yet, I couldn't let him pay the bill for me. Or could I? But what could I do? Stop the trial and step forth and confess? No, I couldn't do that either. And then it occurred to me, there was a way. He would be found guilty, but I could make him a hero. He would get off easily. All I had to do was somehow get word to his counsel.
Your Honor, I wish to recall the defendant to the stand. I do this because we've come into possession of a piece of evidence which casts an entirely new light on this case. Mr. Kubik, you came to this country from Poland?
Yeah.
While in Warsaw during the war, had you ever heard of a man named von Barenheim?
My memory ain't so good.
You were an officer in the Polish army, were you not?
Yeah, I think I was a lieutenant. I don't really remember.
When the Nazis overran Poland, special Gestapo execution squads hunted down most of the Polish officers.
I think that's what happened, but I don't remember. I was in prison. I find it hard to remember. I get headaches.
The leader of the execution squads was Colonel Fritz von Barenheim. He was known as the Werewolf of Warsaw. Do you remember him?
People think I get drunk all the time, but it's just that I have this headache.
He was a war criminal. Hundreds of thousands died because of his atrocities. Now, we have been able to determine that this von Barenheim escaped to America
and changed his identity to Elmer A. Barrington.
I got a headache now.
But you, one night you recognized him. Something happened. He gave himself away. Filled with completely human, absolutely understandable desire for revenge, in a fit of emotion you simply could not control, you killed him.
No. I did not kill him.
You killed him to avenge your dead and tortured countrymen.
I never killed anyone.
The air was changing in that jury room. I could smell it. They were leaning forward and looking at him now. For the first time, they saw him as a human being. I glanced at the lady on my left. A tear was running down her cheek. But the idiot, he was too stupid to see his only chance was to confess. Confess, you fool. Confess, and you're a hero. His lawyer was working desperately to make him see it.
It doesn't lessen your guilt, but it makes it human. Thou shalt not kill, the book tells us. But how do we answer those who understand only death and murder? You're a hero. You've avenged a million crimes. Your name will go down in history as the Avenger of Warsaw.
I would not kill anybody.
This stupid, cringing coward. He was being offered immortality, and he didn't have the courage to accept it. He would have a place in history. He would be somebody. But he sat there just stammering, stuttering, until finally the idea seemed to percolate somehow into his brain.
You need not be ashamed, Mr. Kubik.
Oh, well, I...
Confess proudly. Accept the blame, but also the glory.
Yes. Yes. I recognized him.
Confess. To what can he confess? I killed Barrenheim. Me, I did it. It's my glory, not his. It's my immortality, not his. Why should he be known as the destroyer of the Werewolf of Warsaw, the avenger of the innocent martyrs? I'm the one who killed Barrenheim.
Tell us, Mr. Kubik, tell the court in your own words how you recognized this infamous monster.
Oh, that glory, that credit, it belongs to me. I won't give it away. I won't give up a place in history. I won't. It's mine.
Tell us, Mr. Kubik.
He can't tell you anything. Do you know why? He didn't do it. I'm the one. I killed Barrenheim.
What are you saying?
Listen to me, everybody. I killed him. You see, I recognized him from an old picture in a magazine. I never forget a face. I killed him. You don't believe me? I'll show you where I hid the attaché case. That'll prove it. Prove that I, Henry Pollard, killed the Werewolf of Warsaw. Let the whole world know that I killed him.
And the whole world did. And Henry Pollard became a hero. Of course, he went to jail because some of the suspicious-minded people on the jury, another jury, the one that was impaneled to try him, wanted to know what had happened to the money. But there are still those who see him as a man of the purest motives. My only motive is to return here in a few moments.
Announcing an amazing cold remedy for kids, guaranteed to keep young bodies safe from icy winter blasts like this one.
It's Cornell's annual winter outerwear clearance sale. Starting now, you'll find Cornell's entire stock of coats, jackets, and snowsuits for boys, girls, infants, and junior teens at 20 to 30% off. That's right, 20 to 30% off on every warm winter coat, jacket, and snowsuit at Cornell's. So brave the weather, even if there's a howling storm like this one. And come to Cornell's.
Bronx, White Plains, Roosevelt Field Shopping Center, Paramus, and Menlo Park, where you'll find the entire stock of children's winter outerwear reduced to prices that'll make you feel as sunny as if you were on a tropical beach like this one.
Excuse me, are you a salesman at this Lafayette Radio Electronics store?
Yes, I'm a Lafayette salesman.
Oh, good. Then you can help me.
Sure.
See, I'm very forgetful.
You don't look forgetful.
Yeah, I bought 500 cassettes here yesterday.
Oh, I wasn't forgetful.
I forgot. I don't have a cassette recorder.
Oh, that was forgetful.
I'd like a cassette recorder.
How about this Lafayette's new Criterion 11R mini cassette recorder? Only $59.95. Has a built-in condenser mic, a digital counter, automatic level control, fits into your pocket, and has all push-button controls.
Oh, only $59.95?
Or perhaps you'd like Lafayette's new Criterion 400R cassette recorder with built-in AM-FM radio. Only $89.95. Records directly from its own radio, has a three-way tape monitor switch, digital reset counter, built-in condenser mic, and a battery level meter.
Oh, $89.95. I want one.
Oh, which one?
Which one what?
Which Lafayette cassette recorder?
Say.
Yeah?
Where am I?
What?
Do I work here?
Do you?
Can I help you, sir?
Electronically speaking, who knows better than Lafayette?
This year, don't just go to another hotel. Go to another world. The Americana world. Whether you're on business or pleasure, all 19 hotels are an uncommon pleasure. Plunge into a world of many pools and beaches. Then smash an ace at our tennis courts. Score a birdie on our golf courses. Or conduct your business just minutes away from your hotel. Americana is a world of convenience. And a gourmet world of everything from the seafood in Mexico City to the sirloin in Washington, D.C. And reserve a ringside table at Americana's World of Excitement. With everything from flying Indians to flaming swords, you'll take home a world of memories. Acapulco surf, Hawaii sunset, Palm Springs fairways, San Juan's casinos, Korea's temples, New York's theaters. But you don't have to conquer the Americana world, just a piece of it. Dial toll-free 800-433-1776 for reservations or your travel agent.
A good name is a treasure, but a bad name can also hold a certain value. We live in an age of merchandising, and any product is saleable. If you know how to package it. Right here, at this position on your dial, you can have 7 exciting and suspenseful packages each and every week. Our cast included Howard Da Silva, Catherine Byers, Joan Shea, Bob Dryden, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Tonight's WOR Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less. The preceding program is furnished by CBS Radio. On September 22, 1975, WOR was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until June 1, 1978. We are obligated to make a continuing diligent effort to determine the significant problems and needs of our service area and to provide programming to help meet those problems and needs. We invite listeners to send specific suggestions or comments concerning our station operation and programming efforts to WOR 1440 Broadway, New York, New York, 10018. Unless otherwise requested, all letters received will be available for public inspection during regular business hours.
This is Barry Farber. Join us immediately following the 8 o'clock news right here over WOR New York, the talk of New York.